Just some announcements before we begin. First, this is one of the last talks in this whole building, and I think since he's here, we should thank Oliver for all the work he's been organizing, all the talks that were given in this room for the last 3 years. So just some comments on things coming up. So it has just been decided that right after this, at 4 o'clock, Amy Mottolo will give a talk and lead a discussion about quantum properties of black holes right here. Amy is a professor at Los Alamos. So that will be here. Tomorrow there is at 1:30 a string theory talk by who?
Okay.
Okay, so that's tomorrow here at 2. The only other talk I'm aware of next week is Colloquium at 2 o'clock, Sharon and Tao. Another talk about the dark matter, this time from an observational experimental perspective, which may be here, may be there, I don't know.
There's a screen here about Thursday.
Okay.
So.
September 30th,
April 1:30.
Okay? Yeah. And today we're very honored to have Paul Frampton with us. Paul is a very distinguished particle physicist who has done many things through the years on many aspects of particle physics, grand unification, deep fractions, neutrino masses, many, many other things. He's one of the most prolific and creative people in the field of quantum physics. And it's very nice to have him here with us at this crazy time. And he's going to talk to us about dark energy, Lee for the invitation, and I'm very impressed by the new building that I've spoken about, and it's amazing, and a little bit disappointed that I'm not thinking of Chris Collins in the new building, but this is also our channel too. So I want to talk about some aspects of dark energy. So I'm going to talk about three different aspects of dark energy, and each hopefully for about 20 minutes. And something that 10 episodes will be about an hour. So these are three different pieces of work that I want to do with dark energy. The first thing I want to talk about is the fate of dark energy. And then I'll talk about some stability issues, especially for the special case of the equation of state is below minus 1. But actually, it's applicable for anybody who's got it in a way. And then the third thing I want to talk about is the possibility of changing the theory of gravity instead of putting in dark energy, and to show how that can lead to a different kind of big rip with people out there as a big rip. Not to think about that as they go on. How many people are familiar with what a big rip is?
not very good. The question I said, I guess.
We should have.
Yeah, I guess it's some of those things where I can see. So, as everybody knows, there is this cosmic concordance of the cosmic microwave background, the large scale structure, and the supernova data, which lead to these values where the cosmological constant of dark energy is about 70% of the total critical density, and the matter density is approximately 30%. Now, it's important to realize, I think, that the dark energy has completely changed the old notions that the geometry of the universe dictates its destiny. That is, before there was dark energy, it was very simple. If the universe was open or flat, it would expand forever. And if it was closed, it would recontract into a big crunch or something. So that was a very simple set of destinies. But if there is a dark energy, the question then is, to what extent can precision data allow us to discriminate between the possible fates of the universe? So the first possibility, and as I'll show you, this in its first curve, this really depends on the equation of state, and there are quite different destinies. And in fact, mathematically speaking, no amount of data from the past, all the data we take, of course, from the past lifetime, can uniquely discriminate between the possible future outcomes. So, first of all, supposing the equation of state, which is pressure over density, is equal to -1, as for a cosmological constant, then the Friedmann equation looks like this. A is a scale factor, and normalized so that at the present time it's 1, and the density goes like 1/h³, and that is a constant. So we assume a flat universe and the vector creation. This is still a viable cosmology, and in that case, the scale factor simply increases exponentially, so that as we go into the future, the dark energy dominates the universe, and in an infinite time, of course, A of t diverges. So the universe simply expands exponentially forever, and the dark energy takes over, and omega sub x will of course actually become 1 with arbitrary accuracy. So now if we consider w of the equation of state depending on redshift, there are different possibilities. So first of all, well, the different fates are that you have a diverging scale factor of a finite future time. That's what's called a big rip. It's where the scale factor d of t simply becomes infinite to a finite value of t, and all this record is integrated. And I'll talk about that later on in more detail. Or the dark energy can disappear and you get back to a matter dominated universe. So, if we allow, first of all, consider a constant equation of state, then the Friedmann equation looks like that, where beta is 3 to 1 plus w. And now, this is the big rip, which I'm going to talk about considerably more later on. If w is less than -1, which is consistent with the present data, in fact, some people think the data even favor w being less than -1, but others people think it favors but it certainly allows it to be less than -1. And if we look at the Friedmann equation, that means beta is negative. And integrating this, we find quite simply that there is some finite time in the future, which I call t star, where the scale factor diverges. That means that the universe is just torn apart by the dark energy, which whose density increases with that amount. And time essentially stops. That's the end of the universe. So you have a finite lifetime for papers in the future, just as in the Big Bang, there's a finite time since the Big Bang. So now, yes, sure.
Wouldn't you expect normal physics to be violated at that point? I mean,
you know what do you mean by normal physics?
I don't know, for example, gravity.
Well, I will discuss that in more detail in the third of my talk, Constructive Disintegration.
You don't really believe that it would, that the scale factor would become infinite in a point in time.
I don't have any problem.
Yeah, the curvature of the small
yes. Yeah. Actually, when I first worked on it a couple of years ago, I thought it was completely outrageous. Actually, I don't have any problem with giving that.
Curvature does not diverge.
Yeah, it does. I will describe it if you wait in the third bit. I'll discuss the way in which structure disintegrates gravitational imbalance space and separates the positive and negative.
That's
it.
There might be a divergence. The question is whether the curvature diverges.
The curvature where?
Yes. At this big rim.
What happens is the metric becomes very peculiar. It becomes really space-like. So I think I don't think the curvature diverges. It's a pretty weak curvature. It's not. It's never infinite. It becomes infinite as you reach the big rim. Everything there is infinite.
So it's curvature similar.
Yes, if you like. It's worse than that. I mean, it's we will discuss it more later on. It's a very. I mean, you could argue that some effects of quantum gravity in the very latest point in time before the Big Rip could somehow stop this. We don't understand. But you certainly, in this thinking, they're very, very positive.
Another project was a project.
Can I make a suggestion to you? Paul said three times since we discussed it.
Yeah, I think this is anticipating what I was thinking. So I could give them some of them backwards.
It's why you say the festival.
Yeah, festival. So if we simply, whether I call friendly or not, follow those equations, we get that the rip time from the present time, this is the difference between the present time and the rip time, is some time like 11 giga-years divided by minus 20 minus 1. So a typical time for the Big Rip is roughly the time from the Big Bang, like 15 giga-years. It can be longer than that. It can be arbitrarily longer than that. But the typical time is, say, 15 giga-years. Well, I mean, if you take it seriously, of course, I'm going to discuss what happens to the solar system, forgetting the fact that the sun becomes a bit giant 5 years in the future. But gravitationally bound systems don't survive this equation. Now, you can also make a model, that's what happens with the quantum equation of state. If you make the equation of state depend linearly on the redshift and put in the observational data, and we fit also the supernova data, we can make a more general fit to the all data. And we find there are three scenarios that can happen. And it depends whether, for example, the present equation of state, this is one of the coefficients in this equation, whether the equation of state is less than c minus 1, in that case there's an end of time and a future finite time, so called being there. In this case, for this range, the lifetime universe is infinite, but the dark energy dominates more and more as you go into the future. Of course, under the sub x becomes arbitrarily positive 1. This is related to the coincidence problem, right? That in any of these types of pictures, or even with the cosmological constant, under sub x was 0 at a redshift of 10 or more, and it's basically 1. Redshift of minus 0.9. And so it goes like a step function. And the question is, why are we in the changing region? Or if you take the derivative, why are we in the spike of the double function? If you plot g transforming it x by the r or something like that. That's really the premise of the problem. If you take this value, then the light of the universe is again infinite, but the dark energy will disappear relative to the dark matter, and again the scale factor eventually goes like matter domination. And for example, this shows there are allowed values where these are the three future scenarios for different values. This would be the direct, this would be the dark energy domination, and this would be the reversion of the matter domination in the future for different linear equations for the equation of space. All of them are consistent with the data. Let's see, here's another plot of the present value of the equation of state versus the parameter C. And again, it allows all of these values. And we can also plot for these different linear equations of state the value where the universe makes its transition from deceleration to acceleration, which typically happens around observationally at a redshift of about a half or six. So the way one can distinguish these is if there is more supernova data and you can evaluate the redshift where the deceleration becomes acceleration.
Yeah, could you remind us, C was the rate of change of the
C
in terms of what, the proper setting?
Oh, C is just the formula that I was using. Sorry, I think. C is just the coefficient of C. It's driven from this. It's dw by dc. From the root. It's a rate of.
It's assuming linear dependence.
It's assuming linear dependence in the past and it's cut off in the future. So it's just dw by dc. No, it's just a surface which is not a constant. I mean, you can make it. The data do not justify making more complicated formula at this point.
Isn't
data
the homogeneity of the basis?
Do I say?
Doesn't it break the homogeneity of the basis of the universe? That would you say that certain distance from one sense will change?
No, it doesn't. It's common to this. C is moving to the present time, it's just the parameter. But the universe is always common to this, an isotropic. This is my point. We will come to that later, but not in these models. You mean this equation? No, this is just a phenomenological concept. It's not derived from. I don't understand your question. You're saying, do I know that this is the equation of state?
Yeah, is it radical on the coefficient minus 1 and 1, or is it radical
on the other? Well, no, omega of 0 could be less than minus 1.
You need to guide me down to W's or not on my
W, excuse me. Yeah, W. No, I'm not restricting W to the rate of removal of minus 1. W of 0 can be below minus 1.
But you also allowed for the possibility of existing also a new matter that has omega much, much less than 1.
Minus 1?
Yeah, much less than minus 1.
Yes. Yes. I'm just parameterizing the equation of state. I don't know what the equation of state is. I'll talk some more about WB less than minus 1. So that's just saying that. Well, let me just. So mathematically, the point is that even if you know the large-scale structure, the cosmic microwave background, and the supernova data with the crystallography accuracy, you cannot actually mathematically analytically continue from the past to the future and say what the future will be between these two quite different future scenarios, phenomenologically. The only way one could predict with confidence the future is would be to have a theoretical model, which everybody believed. That's the only point you can make with that. So if anybody tells you that they know what the future of the universe is, they're probably wrong. At this point, we just have no way of distinguishing it without a theory, without a cosmological theory, which is sort of existing. Now I want to talk about the stability of dark energy. This is something that's been discussed a lot. Especially if W is less than minus 1, but if you like, you can look at this for other dimensions. So, as I said before, later a lot of it will be less than minus 1. Now, why does that mean that there is an issue with stability? The point is that if we make a molestness, if we are in the cosmological rest frame, if you like, and W is less than minus 1, what it means is that we're violating the weak energy pitch. And one way to see that, I think, is on the transistors. Momentarily, if you make a Lorentz transformation with V squared over C squared bigger than minus 1 over W, which is less than C squared, you go into another initial frame where the energy density is negative. Right? Which is hard to interpret, except to say that the pattern is unstable. Now, what I want to assume, just as a model, to show this is addressing the question of whether dark energy has any microscopic effect, whether you can conceivably do any kind of experiment on the Earth that would be sensitive to the dark energy. This is not a difficult question. And I know it's very hard to argue you cannot. There are country group views that I've got into, but I don't have conspiracies about them. But I don't think you can. I try to argue why it's very unlikely. I'm making like a toy model. So I take the fact that the cosmological constant is positive, and then I assume there is another vacuum which has cosmological constant zero, and I assume that it can decay from the one to the other with the first order phase transition. So there's an assumption that there's another vacuum and there's a first order phase transition. Then I'm going to try to argue that if this nucleus is a first order phase transition, then the critical radius must be astronomical in size, in the size of a galaxy. Then the nucleus becomes glacial, which means that the stability of the dark energy, which we know from the fact that it's existing for millions of years, is consistent with that. By the way, in this string landscape picture, which has been so discussed, there are vacua going all the way down to landing at zero, which then becomes symmetric. So, in that string landscape picture, in addition to the vacuum you live in, the positive lambda, there are candidate vacua going down to landing at zero. And then they argue that negative lambda is a typical form where just, like I said, you can track and disappear. So, I'm again just taking an equation of state from that range. Now, this is an argument. The simplest way of seeing the problem with W less than minus 1. So this is the stress energy tensor with equation of state W. It's the rest frame tensor. So you have the energy is defined to be 1, and the pressure will just become. Now you can easily see that if you make a boost for rest transformation on that matrix, then you get this matrix. And you can see several things by just looking at the result of that Grove transformation. So the first thing you can see is that since V is first the opposite, so V squared is less than or equal to 1. So if W is greater than or equal to minus 1, then this remains positive, as you expect. And the weak energy condition is expected. But if W is less than minus 1, there is some finite in the velocity less than speed by for which this energy density becomes negative. Actually, it's V squared greater than minus 1 over W. You can also see the special role of W is minus 1 because the form of the matrix remains Lorentz invariant. That's the same on these systems. Okay, is it? So, now, what do you do about that? You could argue that you can't go at a velocity greater than minus 1 over W, and that if you put in typical values for velocities like the high energy cosmic rays, that means W would have to be greater than minus 1 minus 10 to minus 22. Which is one possible conclusion. Another possibility is to say that we can say the vacuum is unstable. And so the question is, how do you see evidence for this vacuum supremacy in the original rest frame? Now, I go back to some work I and others did a very long time ago about looking at unstable vacuum decay as if it is a significant measure. And so we imagine we're in this phase with a positive cosmological constant. And it's like, and if we assume there's a first order phase transition, it's like heating water above the boiling point without boiling, which is better stable and tends to create bubbles. Now, in that case, there's a bubble with a certain surface energy proportional to R squared and an energy proportional to R cubed, which makes these critical radius below which the bubble shrinks away and above which the bubble expands and liquid boils. If you do this in, if you do the vacuum of a material medium and feed the hyperspherical bubble turns to the speed of light, the point is that it's Lorentz invariant, just because the bubble is expanding in the speed of light and looks the same in all frames. But it relates to lifetime and the critical radius. In this case, the energy density corresponding to the cosmological constant is roughly 10 to the minus 3 electron volts to the fourth, which in length units is about, happens to be about 1 millimeter. So 1 millimeter to the minus 4. So one can write again the formula for the action, which is some four-dimensional free sphere times the energy density and its area times the surface tension. And the main question is to estimate its energy density and the surface tension in this particular case. The critical density, excuse me, the stationary value of the action for the critical radius is given by this formula, and this is the critical radius. Is 3 times the surface tension divided by the energy density inside the false vacuum bubble. And you can even calculate the number of vacuum communications in the fast light curve in terms of volume and the characteristic size or mass scale of the problem. So in this little toy model, what I assume is that there is an energy density of about 10 to the minus 3 electron volts in a higher vacuum, and the true vacuum has zero energy. And so we have to estimate, as I said, these mass dimension parameters corresponding to the energy, the surface tension, and the energy scale. Now what I argued in that paper was that the simplest one is the energy difference, which is of course just the cosmological constant itself, 10 to the minus 3 electron volt. It turns out the energy scale, doesn't matter very much. Is it any effects a prefactor? So the conclusions don't really depend very much on what one chooses. Now the surface tension argument is that there's a third assumption which I didn't mention, that I have to assume that to make this kind of argument, I have to assume that dark energy does interact at least at some level with electromagnetic radiation. If it doesn't interact at all, of course, it's hard to initiate the kind of decay. So if you assume that it interacts at least extremely weakly with the electromagnetic field, let's look at a typical electromagnetic field. And consider, say, a macroscopic scale of 1 meter. I mean, if we can already exclude this, it's not even looking at microscopic scale. And you take a typical electromagnetic field in a large magnet, like in a collider, you can have 10 telescopes. If you calculate that energy density, you get considerable units, this 10 to the 17 electron volts per cubic meter. Something like 20 orders of magnitude bigger than dark energy. If you go to much larger galactic spheres, galactic sizes, of course, for the fields all at microscopes, and that deviates to an energy density more similar to the dark energy. So by looking at these energy densities and estimating the surface tension and the probability of transition, you can argue that if there's any T-mode interaction at all, that the size of the critical radius must be astronomical in size. For example, a galactic size, or even bigger. If the critical radius were anything comparable to a meter or something like that, then probably the decay is gigantic. Let's see if I can identify this one. So, what I wanted to argue is that if the absence of stimulated decay from electromagnetic fields would imply a critical radius. I'm sorry, is this coming out of focus? Oh, this is getting a little better. Thank you. Did I do something?
No, I just turned the light off, so I'm trying to get it to focus quicker.
Oh, okay. So, following this argument, the critical radius is at least 10 kiloparsecs. Okay. And if you follow this, you can argue, at least in this point model, even if W is not less than minus 1, by the way, that you have this huge radius, and then you can find correspondingly the number of deviations in the fast light cone. It's incredibly small number. Of course, these things are very rapid, very functions of the radius. But I would argue that from this, as we should discuss whether this is. Say what I have done. So it's, from one point of view, it's clear that the dark energy cannot be destabilized by stimulated decay. But it also implies the general conclusion that dark energy may have no microscopic effect. Which is a conclusion I favor. The dark energy cannot be detected in any glider experiment, for example, or even single-cell experiment, or anything one can conceive of, unless it's a very big experiment, like the size of a galaxy. Does anybody agree with that? No, that's what I might argue with this paper, which is published in the last year.
find it. I'm not a part of this one. The only active energy we know by observation is Cassidy energy.
Right.
And Cassidy energy is a binary effect.
Right.
In space-time, we don't have binary effect. Active energy in that sense is not the same as active energy. The dark energy is not the same as active energy in that sense. So it's hard to see how we
can. Right, it's a vacuum energy.
How we can ever see it. It's very disturbing. I believe it.
Well, it would be nice if it got better, we think, will show up in the LHC if it's a neutral ring or something like that. So we're going to ask what I tell people is, how do you do it if it's permanent?
It does.
But the LHC, there is a paper on the market claiming that the Joseph's injunction effect.
There's what?
Joseph's injunction. I said that wasn't some argument that some people in England or this maybe two or three people a paper. But one can make arguments, sir, but that isn't stuff.
I'm confused because it seems that this mechanism of instability has nothing directly to do with W less than minus 1.
Yeah, it really is true. You could say even if W is minus 1 or even if minus 0.9, the same conclusion obtains. Okay, you cannot protect it.
So
when I first wrote the paper, I thought that I was thinking of W less than minus 1, but actually, I think the same conclusion holds for
him.
It's nothing to do with W less than minus 1. I was confused when I started writing the paper. It's even if W is bigger than minus 1, I don't believe there's any microscopic effect. I would love for somebody to tell me what the microscopic effect of dark energy is. My experiment we do in this room. I don't think it's possible.
Right, but I wanted to ask about, suppose W is less than minus 1.
Right.
Might there be other kinds of instability that would be specific to that case, not this kind of the governor reaction? For example, inhomogeneity might grow. If you look at instability in inhomogeneous models, the case for W. I'm assuming you're modeling it as a fluid.
Right. If there is if the dark energy itself has perturbations and it's conductive, I mean, at the moment, no evidence that the dark energy has any structure at all. But if it has perturbations, then I agree with you, it would be it's worth investigating what happens in those. In fact, the W less than minus one scenario is so discomforting. That's what I wanted to talk about. Back then to Cosmo, where I was visible. Okay, it's certainly worth looking at, yeah. Other words, this is just a toy model with three assumptions. One is that there's another vacuum in the time of 0. Second is there's a first order phase transition. And third is there's at least a very feeble interaction between the vacuum and the field. All of those three assumptions, or any one of them, could be wrong. But it's just a toy model in order to say something. Now I want to talk about something with a surprising number of parallel sessions in Cosmo 2004 in Toronto, which ended also in Toronto, unbeknownst to me. That is the possible alternative to dark energy. So we know we have this accelerating expansion in the Fusion equation, and we will assume the curvature is zero of that universe. So to accommodate the accelerating expansion, we can keep general relativity and add a dark energy term to the so-called right-hand side of the Friedmann equation. That's certainly the normal way of accommodating dark energy. The second possibility is to allow the possibility that the general relativity itself is modified. That is maybe more popular.
Yeah, I have to
hesitate at this point. to raise the question about Einstein's inequality at the largest distance scales of the size of the Hubble radius. And in this way, we can make models where there is no dark energy at all, actually. And dark energy is, as I think it says on this present somewhere, as if somebody else wrote this. So, certainly it's more conservative to assume general relativity is true at all length scales. But one has to remember that general relativity is only being tested precisely at the scale of the solar system, which is a very small system compared to the universe. So there are two reasons to entertain seriously the second possibility of modifying general relativity. The universe is 10 to 28 centimeters in size, and the solar system is only 10 to 14 centimeters. So you have a huge extrapolation of features. And there's no really independent evidence of general relativity. There is indirect evidence, but no really precise evidence of general relativity survives over this huge extrapolation. By the way, this extrapolation is something like this, the extrapolation from the weak scale to the grand unified scale in particle chronology. So it's like a desert hypothesis.
I assume you consider
this is young enough to room, old enough to remember that.
I assume you consider the Lyman pulsar test as a test of the solar system scale.
Well, that's right.
I'm trying to see what you mean by that. It's not in the solar system, but two objects in the solar system.
Yeah, that would be my.
That would be your attitude.
That would be my attitude, that it's really testing a solar system type scale.
You're going out of distance. So there's a change of the distance in the horizon. And you're trying to judge the same. You're saying that it's
two objects. But if LIGO clicks on and measures gravity waves, you would not consider that a solar system scale test.
We will soon begin expert solar system. I just want to emphasize that, you know, to assume the Friedman equation for the universe, I don't want to get into this, but you can argue, and it has been argued, that some of the successes of the CMB and the VBN and so on are direct evidence that general relativity holds at much larger scales than the solar system. And we certainly don't know that. And you can make this device. And also, dark energy has such weird properties when you, especially if one is less than 9 to 1, that it might be more functional just to get them all together. Because it's fairly weird. And I think it's. So, now, of the alternatives to general relativity, it's hard to modify general relativity keeping anything like the elements of Einstein's theory, of course, because it's a miraculous development and compelling theory. And in my opinion, the most conservative extension is this idea that we do have a version of general relativity in 5 dimensions, and that we are confined to a lower dimensional brain. This is a theory which was proposed by Bali Gavadetsi and Bharati in 2000 called DGP. As I mentioned, a surprising number of speakers at Cosmo 2004 seem to be talking about this theory. I think it's a very effective,
but not here. Chose
to talk about an idea. He was talking about something,
a new idea.
Not all of it. So it's kind of a motivated theory. I mean, you have to believe in it. At least it's kind of a comparison model. It's good to have a comparison model. But one point I want to get to in this third term is that these tables of parameters that come out from WMAP with incredible precision and so on for the cosmic parameters actually have as a prior to general relativity scale. It's quite amusing to see if you go into alternative theory that these parameters only look in detail on one of the 20 odd parameters, but they can be completely different from what they are with which to general relativity and all that stuff. So this particular theory, you take a three-brain embedded in five-dimensional Minkowski space, the action is written like this. This is the four-dimensional Planck scale, and that's the familiar action. And this is the five-dimensional resultant time component, which is consistent in this framework, and that's the five-dimensional scale of temperature. And if you vary that action, you get, in this theory at small distances, which means distances smaller than the Hubble radius, Newton's law is recovered on the brain, so you get one of the square. And you're going to get very small departures from normal general relativity. At large distances, which in this case mean meaning distances large compared to the present Hubble radius, the definition of course is like one over R cubed. And so there is a fundamental length scale, which is the ratio of these two contrasts, which we call L of T. This is a generalization of DTP. In their original paper, they had this independent of T, but you actually can put in the time. And G agrees with that. They were thinking of a big rip in that kind of thing. So the equation of motion, if you put it in 2 seconds, you get in empty space, we will later put in the matter, but actually for the future evolution, the matter quickly becomes relevant, so you might as well put zero here. And notice there's no dark energy, of course, there's no cosmological constant. It's all going to be subsumed into the left-hand side. So you get a familiar part and the less familiar part coming from the extra part of the action, where this strange notation, which confuses referees completely, of a round bracket and a square bracket, is taking some singular part of the function, corresponding to confining it to the brain. So, for example, and this is important to the sort of a test with it. If you find a force field solution in the string lattice theory, in a certain range of distances, smaller, much smaller than the fundamental length in the theory, and much bigger than the scorched field radius of the object, the correction is like that. You have the Newton potential, and you have a modification involving the scorched field radius and the length scale in a particular combination. And so what we're going to look at here, so the Newton's potential has changed significantly when this quantity becomes of order 1. You have to look at this term sometimes realize it has some rather strange properties. It's not simply a suppression by R over L. There is also an R over R, there's an enhancement factor compared to Newton's law. So we were interested in this big rip to see, one thing we were interested in is to see how this even more bizarre you make the thing which is already somewhat incredible about the big rip of the finite time in the future. So we make the fundamental length depend on this, the time difference from now to the big rip, from the time to the big rip from now to the big rip. So if E is positive, it means this fundamental length scale will decrease in the future as we approach the rip. And so the length scales in which gravity is modified become successively smaller and smaller, arbitrarily smaller. So this makes the departure from the conventional cosmology even more severe. We're just trying to find what could conceivably happen. So with different values of parameters, we were interested particularly in the disintegration of structure approaching the big rip, or the bigger rip, as we eventually made it. So we're looking at the time, there are two times. One is the time given a gravitationally bound system, when does the system become gravitationally unbound relative to the drift time? That happens at a certain time, which I will tell you. And then there is a later time, which we call T sub cause, where the two objects which were in a bound system, which could be the pulsar and pulsar, or anything you like, become causally disconnected from then until the big rift. So if you take, say, a whole scale of binary pulsar, what happens is that the two elements will, at some time before the big rift, become unbound. And a bit later than that, they will become causally disconnected. They will not be able to exchange information from that time here until the big rift. This happens to galaxies, it happens to the solar system, the whole scale of binary. It eventually happens even to hadrons or any planet system, because the dark energy is becoming more and more singular. So I just took three bound systems, the galaxies, the Milky Way, the Sun Earth system, and the Earth Moon system. And I'm taking the conventional, this is analogous to a fixed equation of state, big rift. So it's the original Caldwell, Kamiakowski, Weinberg big rift, just to check these at the right number. So this is the typical scale of the gravitationally bound system. This is the this is the Schwarzschild radius. For the Earth, it's about a centimeter. For the Sun, it's 3 kilometers. And for the Milky Way, it's that number of centimeters. And then, if you work it out, you find the time between the big rift, between the gravitational unbinding and the big rift, is given by these quantities. And the time between the causal disconnection and the big rift is these quantities. These are related to the period. It's quite easy to show from general arguments that this time should be related to the period of revolution. So for a galaxy, it's about 100 mega-years. For the Sun, it's on the order of a year. And the Earth moon is the order of a month. So it's not so surprising. And then these are relatively shorter times. And if you make the time to the Big Rift longer, you get a table where the time delay is longer, and then the structure and the causal disconnection is correspondingly earlier. But if you make now you can make the approach to the big rift even more secure by making this time dependence more strong. For example, by the way, the Friedman equation is going to be this, and this is the equation for the expansion of the universe. This is his so-called bigger rift. This paper with Takahashi, I think it's published. This paper is coming out in Astrophysical Physics. So, in this case, if P is bigger than 1, what happens is instead of the scale factor increasing as a power, it increases until it has an essential singularity as capital T goes to 0. So you can make the scale factor of the universe increase arbitrarily fast towards the bigger rift. And this is what we also looked at to see how the circuit is integrated in that case. By the way, also, let me make one point. You can write this, all of the dark energy on the right-hand side, and find the effective equation of state. This is, of course, very complicated. It's relatively simple on the left-hand side. And if you look at the present value of the equation of state of what would be a dark energy, if you reinterpret it as dark energy, and you can easily find values of the present equation of state which are well below the W map limits. This is -1.47, for example. Okay, whereas the conventional limits are like -1 plus or minus 0.1. I'll show an even more negative value in a moment. But this is the only time that I've looked at carefully. And it's easy in this EGT theory to find values that are completely contrary to the values that the W map is talking about. Is that okay? So you don't.
What's confusing is that Corey talks about observables, in which they say that if they don't oppose the double greater than maximum bias,
yeah,
that the cost for value were down to -1.8 or something.
When was that? Recently?
That was actually one of the workshop talks.
The recent data have these ellipses that go down. They typically don't go down this far. They go down to like 1.1 or -1.2. But generally, this would be excluded by several standard deviations, assuming general relativity. One of the things, if you don't assume general relativity, you can easily get numbers that are quite different. Okay.
Can you explain, have you reconsidered the density fluctuations in this? What does it mean to say that you allow not you getting -1.5 or something? Because you saw doubling that data.
I'm saying what we're doing is we've looked at the CMB, we've been consistent with the data. What I'm saying is that the WMAP analysts at NASA, or Princeton, wherever they are, have a prior that they assume general relativity at all scales.
But when you say you've made it consistent with the data, does that mean you've redone the analysis of the evolution of density?
Not in the same detail, of course, that they have.
But in some level,
yes, we've checked gross features. So I'm saying that if they didn't put in this prior, they're able to put some part of the data group, all these numbers, should have a footnote saying this assumes general relativity on other scales. Does that mean, they're making a prior?
Oh, no, that part is good. I'll just try to understand.
We have certain figures which are coming to. We have checked in a rather simple way that the CMB and the supernova data analysis are within the range of parameters. Of course, we have not reanalyzed W. I mean, we're not comfortable to do that. But somebody perhaps should, they have the energy. And I'm sure the errors, all the prevalence is very low in that space. Whereas in the particle data group tables, we could say all we assume is if my real, what I've done most of my career is particle models. So there, you assume only the quantum filter is put down to 10 to the minus 18 meters or whatever it is, and we know that's true for quantum electrodynamics. So there isn't any calculation, let's say. So to think that it's like a cosmology data group, the cosmologist is now becoming a great precision and saying we have all these parameters. But actually, I'm pointing at cold water up there. They don't really know anything. That's actually general relativity of all that stuff. It's an obvious point, but nevertheless, it might be worth making. I think people's agreed, and summarized as well, that there should be a comparison model different from general relativity instead of cosmology. And if you make, but this is just a bigger riff. And what happens with a bigger riff? If we assume it's 20 years in the future, these are the same length scales and these are the same source cut radii, and this is the time. Now these time, what happens in this case? Leads to a more rapid expansion, and therefore you get a much earlier confinement. The ripping apart of the structure is more drastic, and you can see these in these numbers. So the ripping apart of the unbinding is this time before the bigger rip. We dare call it the biggest rip, and we saw some people with the more dramatic rip. And then the causal disconnection happens almost immediately after. For example, the Earth-Sun system unbinds, say, whatever that is, 90,000 years before the bigger rip. And just 7 years later than that, it it's mostly disconnected and so on. And you can see the Earth Moon system is, it comes out about 25,000 years before the bigger rim, and just 6 months after it's unbound, it becomes mostly disconnected. So it's the expansion has become so rapid that it's, it happens almost instantaneously at that time. Now, coming back to what we did do with observational constraints, in this DTP theory, the relation between the parameters is different from in conventional cosmology. So you have a relationship between the curvature, this extra energy density, and the matter density, which is nonlinear. It's like this. It's not the simple adding of three parameters equals one. So the general constraint is a little bit different. So we did check that if we take this bigger rip with 50 giga years to 30 giga years before the rip, and we look at this, all this extra energy and the dark matter in a plot, then we get generally ellipses like this. And the point is that it is consistent to make, this is flat. See, everything has changed. It's no longer true that you must make omega m plus omega l equals 1 in this case. There's a nonlinear relation that this is curve. And putting omega m, the mutual value of 0.3 from the Laplace structure, you can find a consistent value for these two different ages, times before the bigger rim. And this is another plot which shows we can make what this actually shows is that the time before the big rip for omega n being say 0.3 from the last structure is has to be equal to or greater than the agents of the Big Bang, which is roughly 13 giga years or something like that. Even in these models, it's hard to make the big rip or the bigger rip happen less than 15 giga years in the future. I'm sure one can make a model if somebody wants to. But typically the big or bigger rip happens at least as long in the future as the Big Bang is in the past. Yeah, sorry, I don't find this big rip, I find this big rip philosophically quite attractive, because I like to find that life in the future and in the past. If you've never heard of the big rip before, it probably sounds completely crazy, as it did to me 2 years ago. But the more you think about it, it actually doesn't seem crazy at all to me anymore. It seems even better than the internet people in the future. But that's just so about these variables, I forgot to mention there's a minus 2.9 value that we get in this bigger rip for the crystalline equation state. If you write it on the right hand side and rewrite it with the dark energy. That's a funny thing to do, but nevertheless, that's what's. There are a lot of papers, including these and others. These happened to be ones written in July 2004. There are many other papers pointing out the point that I have made today, that if you change general relativity to DGP or something like that, then various cosmic parameters change, you know, and there's a lot outside the error bars of the table that the fundamental is produced. And everyone is somewhat fascinated with it. And a lot of people have made that point. I think it's in agreement with that assumption made here. Oh, I was just saying what I just said. That, so in this picture of the universe, which has such a different future from the world of the personal life, all this intricately formed structure, which we're beginning to understand how it formed to make galaxies and clusters and so on, in this picture it's systematically disintegrated and then possibly disconnected as one approaches this time, which is at least 50 years in the future. So the whole thing is sort of reversed, disintegrated, having been made so carefully. So we modify the left-hand side of the Friedman equation, which is really the geometry of the general relativity. Now, although you can always put something from the left-hand side to the right-hand side of an equation and change the sign or whatever, it's not really, I think, a dark energy, because the equation of, say, E over rho is very complicated, and so that's why in these papers we call it a model without dark energy. And that's of course semantic, but it seems to me this is really changing the geometry, and not, it's just removing the dark energy altogether. So that's just an alternative. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, a couple of things. What happens to galactic sized black holes in the Big Rift? Because you've got some enormous event horizon, but space time wants to rip it apart, right?
That's an interesting question. I have to confess, I don't think anything can survive, because the density of parameters becomes so huge. That's an interesting question. I don't know. I mean, we haven't looked at black holes. So that's a very good research question. And what we have to do with black holes is a good question to do with whether it would, what could happen.
The other thing I wondered is all your bound systems that become unbound or gravitationally bound, if you looked at how when atoms get ripped apart.
Oh yeah, they that happens even nearer the Big Bang.
It must be very close.
Oh yeah, then you're talking 10 to the minus 13 seconds. All the atoms get ripped apart. Even hadrons get ripped apart, because at the same time I forgot to mention the temperature is of course also diverging. So you're way above the UCD temperature. You went from Parker to 1 plasma, you have much higher temperatures. So the only thing that could stop the Big Rift, I think, is quantum gravity, as you approach, say, the Planck time before the Big Rift, where we don't know what's happening. Perhaps something will put the brakes on and will stop the Big Rift by some quantum gravity effect. This was mentioned by also Frenkowski and Caldwell. But that's long after all the atoms and hadrons have been torn apart, basically everything. It's very strange physics. The values of pressure, the density of any scale, when you write it, gigantic numbers, and nothing. It's not really anything anymore. The black holes is something we can discuss. Yeah.
Partially out of vacancy. I was worried about some bound system. Systems are different from others, and especially if you have a confining figure such as QCD.
Right.
Normally, if you try to read, a Mason part, eventually the track time will snap, but it will just create a new block at what
right.
So you would just end up doing an enormous amount of value for that, instead of actually ripping the individual blocks apart.
Right.
You expect that this
Well, that's at zero temperature. Well, actually, the temperature here is also diverging.
So
it's basically high temperature.
The density increases. I mean,
the density increases. Here, the density is the dark energy is also
for the planet. Density.
No, the density of the dark energy.
Sure, but
no, the question is what's making the temperature go up?
Yeah.
Since naively, this gas at 12 times the summer is 10.
Right.
Well, locally, I would expect that, I mean, the density, if you take a given hadron, the density of the dark energy is going up and up, and it's eventually much more dense than the normal matter we just get. So this will take over, and I would think if it's any perturbation at all, but then again, it depends whether it's really smooth.
I mean, it interacts with matter only gravitation. Like no other interaction. What's the mechanism for heating?
Well, I mean, if there are fluctuations, then we have to respond to this negative gravity.
Gravitational interaction will be kind of strong enough to transfer energy to the matter.
Yeah, because in this theory we have the scale at which the gravity is modified is also getting smaller. But as you get to the smaller than that much, I mean, you go close to that much. So at that point, in the end, just the least out loud, I would imagine that if there are fluctuations in it, quarks and gluons and whatever, you have to respond.
You have to specify the interactions.
You have to assume, that's why we stopped with the Earth and the you have to say, however, but I think however feeble the interaction of dark energy is with the standard model, it will eventually raise the temperature because everything will have a plunge. Now, if it doesn't interact at all, but it's so fluctuates, like if it fluctuates at all, I mean, if you think about it, say, atom, the electromagnetic force of an atom, and we're overwhelmed by this negative gravity. Eventually, so the electrons and nucleus and how you put it on become allowed and you can just gravity if it fluctuates at all. I mean, I agree with you, it's completely smooth and homogeneous, no interaction with anything else. Perhaps the atom is going to stay there.
You get massive gravitons. So the various Newtonian fraction can be a serious issue here in this theory. You actually have to do the expansion of the Newtonian flux expansion and force the Newtonian expansion before I can use an open conservative. But there are all sorts of issues with this theory that I feel a lot of time and cause trouble for systems of trouble.
Well, the best is
this is independent of the dark
drift.
I'm talking about technical
questions. Yeah. And the actual market. Well, there are some papers. It's true that there is a third component of the graviton that is the zero in this theory. So what happens if you're very comfortable, maybe it's the other form, but you have velocity plus or minus 2, you also have a restriction. You have a velocity zero, which is coupled. You don't have plus or minus 1. So you can look at the Van der Waals theorem and all that. Now what Valli has shown more recently, like 2003 or something like that, and there's a suggestion that this extra term in the potential actually affects the orbit of the moon around the Earth at a level of 100 microns or something like that. And so they've now suggested that it's actually being done apparently by metal movements, to measure the orbital distance to 100 microns. And this extra component of the graviton, this velocity zero, has a strange suppression and enhancement. the principle to make a measurable effect on the movement around the curve. And there is an experiment. Body structures.
There are theoretical problems.
Oh, there are theoretical.
Right. No, I'm trying to have a look at it. This is in the
It's right. No,
I think it could be wrong. It's very hard to modify this kind of thing.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it's maybe. As far as I know, this theory, I don't know of any theoretical consistency. It doesn't have ghosts, as far as I know.
Well, that's the problem. I think we've got a series of stories.
As far as I know, it's consistent, so it's a fairly young theory, and there may be other modifications of gravity that are equally or more interesting.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Any last quick questions?
Okay.
We have an awesome food chill tomorrow morning. So just to remind you, we have Paola in this thing in Nicola, and then tomorrow, say your name loudly.
I just heard that we very likely be in this here again. Maybe just email and say, this will be fine.
That's not surprising.
I'm sorry. 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 I